complex one, and I think you can lay it to a conflict between Lilly and Goldstein. By then, our relations are really so bad that we weren't even polite toward each other. And I'd say that I told him rather emphatically that this stuff was true without any doubt and ought to be published. And anything I would say, he would contradict, and he decided it needed more checking. So this was before the use of 3KC filters on it. We'd done this with 25KC filters.
He must surely have known about Berkeley working on the same stuff, though. He didn't feel still obliged to some pressure?
That's an interesting question. He felt that W49 was an obscure source, and it was the only one he knew that we'd looked at. At least a couple of dozen sources. And I think that he felt if Goldstein was for it, it must be wrong. Regardless of the reasons.
And I guess, did Alan Gunderman want to publish it also?
Oh, I'm sure she did. Yeah. But as a student, she couldn't really apply any pressure of any sort.
Right.
She had to do what her advisor wanted. And
what was it only when Berkeley came out with it that Lilly was willing to...
What happened was that Lilly, as soon as, let's see, I think as the observations with 3KC filters began, I sort of left that and went to my Virgo horn. That was all I was doing toward that, plus some other 21 centimeter observations done without the 60 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to observe the other transitions, all four transitions. And that was done in due course. It took a few weeks to retune the maser each time. I had to act only in an advisory capacity there, because Ivan Johnson understood the function of the maser very well. And he would retune it. And also, let's see, I'm leaving out Hayes Penfield, who was there, and who began then constructing what was the Harvard 21 channel receiver, a portable receiver, quite similar in principle, but quite different in design from the one that we had then, the 10 channel one. And so he was nominally in charge of the
the 3 kilohertz.
And Gunderman was hard at work on her thesis by then. In fact, sometime in mid-January, I don't recall these times at all. I was looking for a job. I went to Texas at Christmas time, I remember, and I went to Colorado, and was working on the 21 centimeter stuff.
Well, Gunderman put the stuff in her thesis.
And I didn't really mind too much. I thought my permission should be asked, though. I felt I had some rights to this data, but it never was asked. I told, of course, I served on Gunderman's committee, and that was a kind of embarrassing experience at times. She was plainly one of our good students, and I hope that this kind of stuff doesn't really... belong in your book or something. She knew that she mustn't offend me dreadfully. In fact, we were more or less simpatico, as I understood her position and she understood mine. And I told her I expected her, for the cost of having this stuff in her thesis, to say exactly somewhere in the thesis under what circumstances it was taken. Well, she did this on a piece of paper stuck into the front for the copy that I had.
Only for you.
And removed for Lily's. It really was funny in ways. But of course, lots of times it didn't seem funny.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I felt sure that Lily was going to publish that stuff eventually, and that how could he keep from having my name on the publication? Because I had chosen the source, given the instructions to the observer, built the receiver, and had various other valuable services. But he did. He called me up after I left, and I think they tried to measure the polarization. I don't really recall the detail. He said, how about my sending you the original stuff on the OH detection? emission detection, he said to me over the phone. You and Gundermann can work on it yourself. And I said, well, it's pretty late.
This was by this time Berkeley.
Yeah, a couple of, almost 2 months after Berkeley had published. I'll look at it, I said. And he said, well, he didn't say, well, then I can remove your name from any future work. But that's what happened.
So who was on that paper, finally? Lily Penfield?
Lily Penfield. I don't know who else. But they referred to the detection by Gundermann, Lily, and Goldstein or something in that order.
In the paper?
And then they gave as a reference Gunderman's thesis, which struck me as really irregular.
Which only mentioned you and your copy.
Yeah. Well, as far as explicit reference to what I did, of course, Gunderman's thesis has some kind of acknowledgement.
Yeah, yeah. Did Berkeley, as far as actual detection date, who was first?
Oh, we were way ahead.
And then how? When did they?
I don't recall the details, though.
It was a few months at least.
They published very quickly as soon as they had good evidence of the. When was their paper? June?
It was the summer sometime, yeah.
Our detection must have been in March. February. I'm not sure.
Ed Lilly had a heart attack in here somewhere, didn't he?
Yeah, and that could very well have influenced him somehow.
Let me thought so. He said that he felt that if Lilly hadn't had the heart attack, that the work might have gone faster or something like that.
Yeah, sometimes. Let's see. Well, the work wouldn't have been any different.
He may have been a different man, you're saying.
Yeah. I'm sure there are extenuating circumstances from his point of view. I'm sure that I wasn't an easy guy to work with in all times, but I really built him the most sensitive radiometer in existence then. You might argue that I didn't really build the Harvard Maser, which was a really top-flight piece of equipment, and that's true, I didn't. On the other hand, it was a one-channel device, and I made it into a multi-channel device, and I conceived of the digital data processing, and though I didn't make it myself, I wrote the specifications under which it was made, and had made it work. So, perhaps one more thing that did gripe me a lot is that same receiver was used for quite a bit of other work, and Lilly had to refer to his receiver in each of his papers, and he didn't do it on the first. My name was never mentioned in any of the stuff that followed. So I don't feel I was terribly fairly treated there, but so it goes.
Do you remember when that heart attack was, when that occurred?
Oh golly, let's see. I remember coming to visit him once. I know it was pretty close to the time that I was leaving.
So this was after long after you detected the OH then.
Yes, long after. Oh. That is it could have been published before his heart attack, I feel pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, is there anything else
relevant to this?
Not necessarily this, but any other project I might not know about that you've been associated with of some historical value?
Oh, yeah, not sure. Lots of interesting things.
Yeah, let's turn it off.
Oh, boy.
The chapter on radar astronomy.
You're really getting it from the horse's mouth or something.
So, when are we here?
Well, in 1958, the MIT group wrote a paper on radar echoes from Venus. And in 1959, a year and a half later, they made a subsequent attempt to see radar echoes.
Oh, these are negative results.
The first one was a positive result, claimed a positive result, using the Millstone Hill equipment at a frequency around 1100 megacycles, I think. And in 1959, several groups looked, if I remember
correctly. Where was that published? Excuse me.
That's in Science.
In Science. Yeah. And who is this?
Well, Price is the first author. There must be.
Okay. Five,
or a dozen. And, in 1959 at Jodrell Bank, there was an attempt, or a much cruder one, much less powerful transmitter, but I think by then the 250-foot telescope was working. And they published an equivocal paper supporting the MIT size of the solar system. You see, the whole problem is making the first guess on the range.
Right.
They looked at five range gates. Jeez, this sounds just like my five OH filters. Five range gates, the middle one, giving an answer if the MIT value for the astronomical unit is right. And,
so a very marginal sort of confirmation.
Yeah.
And they, which group, who was this in Jodrell?
Evans and Thompson, is it? Evans, anyways, in my mind, is one of the observers. And he said, there's a 5% chance that our results are wrong, but...
is this in Nature?
This is in Nature. But we think the MIT value for the solar parallax is all right. So, this was my brother's... well, my brother had gone to work at Jet Propulsion Laboratory January of 58. And by that fall, I had become a student at Caltech. And a part-time employee at JPL. And so in 60, I guess it was, they began to make plans for the March 61 conjunction. And I got hired as a consultant to help design a ranging system. My brother built a spectrum analyzer.
What is his name?
Richard M. Goldstein. He's a leading radar observer at Caltech now, and he wanted to measure the spectrum of the echo, and with an autocorrelation type receiver, and incidentally, what radio astronomers call a Weinrib receiver, although this particular machine was built considerably earlier than Sandy's machine for different astronomical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out there for a few days to think about how to do this, and brother and I jointly conceived of the idea of doing ranging on the planet in addition to the experiment of measuring the spectrum.
Now, you believed the MIT results?
No.
No, you didn't?
No, we didn't.
You felt they still needed...
We felt they needed confirmation.
Were they? Was it generally believed by the astronomical community?
I don't think so. There was considerable skepticism, although they could be right. When the technique was extremely complicated. There are a lot of talented people involved in it, so you wouldn't want to say it's wrong.
Right.
But considering the belief of it, I do recall that. There was a new way of measuring the solar parallax in those days. Pioneer 5 spacecraft went near the sun. And, I can't remember the name of the guy who produced that data, but he came up with an AU that disagreed with the MIT value. And, I'd say that it wasn't well thought of.
Yeah, I sidetracked you. You're talking about you and your brother.
Okay.
Did you say you developed the autocorrelator?
No, brother is invented the autocorrelator. Independently of Sandy Weinrib, I'm sure.
And a couple of years earlier.
But the parochial nature of we astronomers is...
Right. But the same nature, and probably somebody else did it earlier than that in some other field.
That's probably true.
Some electrical engineers.
Yeah. Well, in fact, Van Vleck is the guy who analyzed the clipping method of autocorrelation analysis, so he certainly deserves some of the credit. Oh, yes. I can't avoid sidetracking a little bit. I'm sure the Dickey radiometer is not really first invented by Dickey. That is, the switching principle is such a fundamental thing in physics. It must have been done outside.
Well, it's a null experiment, essentially.
Yeah, that's everybody knows that that's the way to do physical experiments, to compare nearly equal things and look for a small difference. That's a kind of intuitive idea. But anyhow, forgetting that. Brother and I working together, I think I proposed... first thought of just making the radar work like a Dickey radiometer, send out equal signals or something. I kept saying, brother made the really vital contribution by saying, well, you don't need a switch for this Dickey radiometer. All you have to do is to turn off the transmitter.
Right, in time.
Yes. And so you have a switched waveform, and you look at it with the...
So this was the first pulse radar, in other words. The MIT was...
Well, the MIT radar was pulse. This was, you might call this CW. It worked in a square wave fashion.
I see.
The duty cycles were 50%. Yes, so the Caltech method was, they had a CW transmitter. Well, either way is perfectly sound. But at the time of closest approach, when the radar signals are strongest, the Doppler velocity goes to zero, so one can't do it by measuring velocity. You need to measure the range. Well, if you think about a Dickey radiometer that has a switch that comes disconnected from the phase detector, I suppose there's an arbitrary phase difference, there's a kind of triangular autocorrelation function that you measure, and when it's perfectly adjusted, you're at the peak of one of these things,
mm-hmm.
and if you're 90 degrees out of phase, you pass through zero, and another 90 degrees, you get a negative maximum, a minimum. And so, if you switch very slowly, even though you don't know the delay in the solar system, you'll still be all right. And so that was the basic principle. You start switching very slowly, taking into account what you do know about the distance to the sun. And then you speed up the switching and measure the phase difference that's required to bring you to the peak of the autocorrelation function. So,
and this is what you did. What year was this now?
This was the conjunction of Venus in 61. So
right. And
this was about the 1st of March, 61.
And where was this published?
Not published.
Not
Let's
published.
See. Well, it's in the it's in various internal reports of Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And,
but you got a definite return.
You can see it
from Venus.
And
but if you felt that confirmation was what was needed for the MIT results, why did you not publish it?
Why didn't we publish our own? From my point of view, I had advised how to design an instrument. I hadn't done it at all. I was there to see it. There's several other complications to the instrument. You, since you don't know the rotation of the planet, you have to have filters of various size to adjusted to the return spectrum to have an optimum signal-to-noise ratio. So we started off with the pessimistic assumption that Venus was rotating like Earth, and it worked 8 octaves downward to narrower filters because we had an 8-channel recorder, and stopped there. So when I was there on the narrowest filter, we could plainly see the echo. We did the various things. You turn the transmitter off, and 6 minutes later, the echo disappears.
Right.
And
which is pretty much a clincher.
Yeah, in that case. So we did that several times, and that was really all that I, all the participation I had in the experiment. That is.
So why didn't your brother? Wasn't he interested in the?
He was anxious to finish a thesis. And radar echoes from Venus might be a reasonable thesis, but he wasn't convinced of it. He wanted information on the rotation. But anyhow, let's replay that a bit. It was the 1st of March, and it was nearly, it must have been 20 days before the closest approach. In that time, he had to redesign the experiment and make a series of narrower filters that is, to improve the signal-to-noise ratio,
mm-hmm.
which he did. And the same thing applied to his correlator, that is, the resolution of it was too broad now, it had to be redesigned. So he had a very frantic 2 months getting that stuff changed to be ready and to make observations. And his point of view was to get a thesis.
I see, yeah.
And we were all JPL employees. I didn't feel...
So did any group ever... What was the next group to... This was using an 85-foot at Goldstone.
Yeah. No, there are a lot of... 285 foots in Goldstone, in fact. It was a bipod.
One sending, one receiving?
One sending, one receiving. There were a series of observations that made, and I think I got paid $80 a day consulting, which seemed to me to be a generous thing, and I didn't complain.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
This ends the interview with Sam Goldstein at the Green Bank High Velocity Cloud Conference, 6 September 1971, namely Labor Day.